Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
President Trump reveals his Supreme Court justice nominee in a primetime televised event tonight. Meanwhile, the administration faces a court deadline to return children separated from their parents at the U.S. southern border. Lots to talk about today with Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent at NPR's Washington desk. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Lisa.
So it is decision day on the Supreme Court nominee. President Trump seems to be enjoying very much so the spectacle that he's created around his pick. You have seen previous nominations over the years, and I wonder how they and how the selection process of previous nominees have stood in contrast.
This has been a highly public process in the sense that a list of 25 names was used by President Trump during his campaign in 2016, pointing to that list and saying, I'm going to appoint from this list, and these people, I think we can pretty much say automatically, that was President Trump's word at the time, automatically would be votes that would overturn Roe versus Wade. This was done, obviously, to mobilize the voters who care a great deal about that issue and would like to see the Supreme Court revisit that issue. So we've had this list of 25 put together largely by a man named Leonard Leo, who heads up the Federalist Society, and with input from other conservative groups. But we've had that list, and this group of finalists was culled from that list.
So he's drawing the battle line right there, saying that he wants a nominee who will, as justice, overturn Roe versus Wade. How much do you think, though, that the president would be trying to avoid some kind of headlong fight with Democrats in Congress, or does he seem to be girding up for it?
The president was clear about this in 2016, but more recently he has sung a somewhat different tune, saying he's not going to ask any of these candidates about the Roe versus Wade decision or any other decision. And Neil Gorsuch, who was also on that list of 25 and was the president's first pick a year ago, said that if the president had directly asked him about that case or any case, he would have, quote, walked out the door, unquote. So now that we're going into the confirmation process, the president is not talking directly about Roe versus Wade or any other case, but he is putting forward four people at this point, and then eventually, of course, tonight, one person from that original list.
Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, had this to say about the acrimony around this confirmation process. He was on Fox News Sunday.
Here's the truth. Donald Trump could nominate George Washington or John Marshall, and they couldn't get through. Maybe a handful of Democrats will vote for a Trump pick because they have to politically. I've never seen it this dysfunctional, but this is a nightmare for red state Democrats to oppose a highly qualified nominee.
So, Ron Elving, there are several red state Democrats up for re-election this year. Do Democrats have any chance of preventing a nominee from being confirmed?
It would appear they would only have that chance with Republican help. There are 10 Democrats seeking re-election in states that voted for Donald Trump. Several of those Democrats have already voted for Neil Gorsuch. And if everyone stays in their partisan ranks, the nominee is going to be confirmed, 50 to 49. If for some reason the vote would be tied, the vice president, Mike Pence, would come in and break the tie. So even if all the red state Democrats on the ballot this year still stand with their party, they'd still lose without at least one Republican crossover. So all eyes are going to be on those two women who have been known as supporters of abortion rights in the past.
I want to talk about immigration now. Tomorrow's an important deadline for the Trump administration on this. Federal judge in San Diego ordered children under the age of 5 to be returned to their parents by tomorrow. The administration today is arguing for an extension to that. I wonder what the White House is gaining and what it's losing as a result of how this all is playing out.
The White House is gaining the big headline they've always wanted, which is to say that the border is closed to people coming from these countries and seeking asylum, that they, if they come, will be turned back, or that they will at the very least have to wait a long time for a court hearing, and during that period of time, they'll be separated from their children and kept in detention, not allowed to go into the United States, and then expected back for some sort of a hearing at a later date. That's what they want the world to know about the state of our border on the Mexican border at this particular time. What, of course, they were not anticipating was the enormous backlash to the sight of these children being separated from their parents. We have the number of approximately 100 under the age of 5. They are not going to be reunited in the next so many hours because it turns out they are not well-located in the sense of knowing where they are to get them back with their parents. And then, of course, eventually, there are something like 3,000 when you count in children of all ages.
And just very briefly, did the U.S. Administration intend for this process, which seems as though it is so mired right now, to be handled in this way, or is this just an oversight?
There is some degree of purpose here in trying to send this message to people in Central America and elsewhere that this border is not going to be as open as it has been. At the same time, they did not expect it to be the firestorm that it has been and the political albatross it could be for Republican candidates in the fall.
Thank you. Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent of NPR's Washington Desk.